Welcome to the Steelers Battling Podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host Cody. Cody, how are you today?
James, I'm in shock. I didn't know you were going to say that.
Neither did I. It just kind of came to me.
Yeah, we suck again, so that's about where I'm at. I don't have anything else to say to that.
There are some positives, and we're going to talk about them. I think there's some real things that can be expanded on from this game, at least.
At least.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. But we always have before the game news.
Absolutely. And before the game news,
we have Steelers by the Lake news.
That's right, man. We're going to talk about last month, the month of September, and give you a little recap on how you all did on downloading the podcast. So in our worldly view, of course, the United States of America, the most downloads, followed by Canada, and then third place, the United Kingdom. Doesn't tell us where in the United Kingdom, just the United Kingdom.
Just the United Kingdom. We do have where in Canada, which...
All of them in Manitoba.
Manitoba.
Every single download.
Thank you, Manitoba.
Much love to you, Manitoba.
Much love. As far as the United States is concerned, we always go over the top five states. We talked about how Ohio was winning. Pennsylvania, you did it. You came back.
Yeah.
You won by a decent margin. I would say it was a decent margin.
Yeah, a good 20%, man.
Yeah, I like it. So Pennsylvania came in first, Ohio in second, California in third, and then I believe a newcomer to the top five, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
You might be right. I don't think Kentucky's up there too often.
Kentucky at number four.
Woo!
And then Florida at number five. I would like to say more about the sixth place. They were close, but I just can't. Not in the top five.
Hey, and shout out to those in Kentucky who are listening to the pod, because like the first year and a half that we did this, we had no downloads in Kentucky, and it was like the only thing east of the Mississippi other than the Northeast states. You know, up there with Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire, like we haven't had any downloads up there yet. But Kentucky was this glaring hole. And now you're one of the top five most downloaded states, so really appreciate the listenership.
Heck yeah. Share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with your Steeler fan friends.
That's it, man.
Is that the correct thing? Steeler fan friends.
It is.
Yeah, whatever. Or your Steeler friend fans, I don't know. Share it with everybody. We love growing our Steelers by the Lake family, and we appreciate you guys downloading and listening. And your feedback, so remember, hit us up on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, any of the following. Even email. You can email us at steelersbythelake@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys.
That's true. Very true.
Now time to move to before the game
news. Before the game.
News.
Yeah, so in a shocking move, the Steelers signed Derek Tuzga permanently to the 53-man roster and released Jahmyr Jones after Jahmyr Jones having a stellar preseason with Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh being shorthanded at that position. It seemed to me that Derek Tuzga just is a little bit more NFL-ready, a little bigger, a little stronger.
Yeah.
I think that had a lot to do with it. He had a much better game against the Bengals than Jahmyr Jones did.
Yeah. And because of that, Jahmyr Jones, like we said, he was released, and then he was claimed as well by the Rams.
Now, the expectation was that he would clear waivers and Pittsburgh would move him right back onto the practice squad, and it didn't happen, which kind of sucks. We'll see where things go.
And just to clarify, if he was claimed by them, does that mean he is on their active roster?
Correct. You can't claim him and put him on your own practice.
I would have been really annoyed.
And there's a rule with that, too, where if you claim somebody off of someone else's practice squad, they have to stay on your 53, I want to say, for at least like 3 weeks. So you can't just like claim them and then demote them back down the next week.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, and that might be because Pittsburgh still hasn't filled that position on the practice squad yet.
Mm-hmm.
That might be. And this is just an off-the-wall, like, tinfoil hat-thinking James going on here. That might be why they have not filled that position yet. Because there's one Mr. Quincy Roche, who may or may not be making a large impact with his current team. If he isn't, maybe he gets released in a similar type move and Pittsburgh claims him back.
Got it.
You never know.
Very interesting to see how this will all play out.
Yep, absolutely. The protected players this week. Pittsburgh only protected three, which is weird. They're allowed to protect four. They chose Taco Charlton, Carl Joseph, and Jalen Samuels as the three protected players this week. Some injury news.
Two of those players make sense. The other one, not so much.
Yeah, we're still a little baffled by the Jalen Samuels thing. But
yeah, but we do have injury news. Big injury news. Yes. Like large man injury news.
We were talking last week that hope could be on the horizon. Help could be coming with the eligibility of Zach Banner, Stephon Tuitt, and Anthony McFarland to be able to come back off of the injured reserve. Zach Banner returned to practice on Wednesday, which now opens up a 21-day window where he can be activated to the 53-man roster. So look for that to happen hopefully this week. That would be really nice.
It would be phenomenal.
But I must say, if he comes back, right tackle was probably one of the stronger positions on the team for the line this week. Yep. Joe Hag actually had a really good game. But I'll still happily take Zach Banner back if he's able to play this upcoming week against the Denver Broncos.
Well, listen, don't be surprised if they throw Joe Hag on the left side, left tackle position.
I would be surprised.
Can't play any worse than Dan Moore did last game.
Oh, I know your thought on that, but
I know.
He actually can. He has the potential. He has done it before.
I know. So some guys, all who were out injured before the game, you had Okorafor, Coward, so two offensive linemen, Chase Claypool, which was very sad. He got injured in practice over the week. And then Carlos Davis as well, all out injured before the game.
And as far as what we know on these guys, the core four was the concussion. Coward had a practice injury last week. So this is the second week he's been out with injury. Claypool was a hamstring in the middle of the week, which is bad news. Those don't typically heal up real quickly unless it's a minor hamstring. And Carlos Davis has been out all year so far with a knee injury. I'm kind of surprised they never put him on injured reserve, honestly. Because at what point are you just going to stop putting him out every single week with a knee injury? He can't even practice a whole week long. So you got to think that maybe at some point in time there might be another move going on that defensive front there. Steelers then chose to elevate both Cody White and offensive tackle Chaz Green for the game on Sunday, and this, I'm sure, was an immediate reaction to the fact that we were down a wide receiver and down an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Inactives for Sunday's game.
Inactives were Dwayne Haskins, no surprise there, Buddy Johnson, as well as Akilo Witherspoon, who has not played very much, but you also had Carlos Davis, obviously, Chukwuma Okorafor, Rashard Coward, Chase Claypool, all those guys that were injured were obviously out.
Yep. So seven guys on the list, as opposed to the normal five, because they called two up from the practice squad and elevated them for the game. So with that all being recapped, it's time to get into the game. And it actually, for the first time in, 11 regular season games, started off great.
The offense scored a touchdown for the first time.
First drive.
For the first time in the first quarter since it's been like, I think it's been like 9 weeks or 10 weeks, yeah. Maybe even more.
Yeah, going back into a while ago, last season.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
The last time we scored in the first quarter was a defensive pick six against Baltimore last year.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
Was that the Spillane one?
I believe it was the Spillane one, yeah.
That's funny.
That was the last time we had a... I think it was Spillane. I think you're right. Yeah, we didn't start off bad. Only 8 plays. We had the ball first, 8 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. And it took up a good portion of the clock, which was nice with 4 minutes and 56 seconds, almost 5 minutes off the clock. That was great how you wanted to start.
And you saw some nice successful run plays as well, which we've been struggling to see all season long.
Yeah, I think it was one of his first runs of like 15 yards or more. Might have been close to 15.
Yeah, best average per carry he's had all year.
Yep.
And there's a successful run metric that is used to judge whether or not a particular run is successful. It's like yardage needed on that play versus where you're at kind of stuff. 11 of the 15 runs he had were successful runs.
Okay, that's what we like.
73%, which up until this point, they were hovering right around like 30%, which was pretty awful.
Pretty awful. Not ideal.
But before we get too far into Najee and his performance in the game, we do need to talk Ben Roethlisberger. And there was some ups and downs, as there have been in many games. The first drive starting off, you know, he had a couple of missed throws, and then hits just a beautiful deep ball, recognizing the fact that the defense had jumped off sides, takes advantage of the free play, goes deep to Deontay Johnson, and a beautiful touchdown pass.
Yeah, and he didn't shy away from Jair Alexander in that situation because that's who he threw over.
Yeah.
Which was very nice to see him confident enough to make that throw. Beautiful throw, only where the receiver could get it, and Deontay made a great, I want to say a reposition on the ball. The ball was thrown a little outside, and rather than trying to turn his head, he just kind of ran towards the side of the field. Great catch, great touchdown, great play. Unfortunately, you didn't get many more after that.
Yeah, a lot of dump-off passes in this game. Really, your chunk plays came from that, and a few of them with James Washington, but not much in the attempts down the field. You could definitely tell the team was missing Chase Claypool because they like to take shots deep with him, and it just wasn't happening. Unfortunately, there were two plays that really stuck out. Where Juju had lined up in the slot, ran like a fake in or a fake out, and then went deep, toasted the guy covering him, and Ben just missed him. The only solace I took in it was that Ben didn't miss him by much either time. And this was a throw he wasn't even attempting the first 3 weeks. So finally they recognized the part of the game that they were not taking advantage of and actually threw the ball, but just missed on the execution and missed by that much. And really both of them would have likely gone for touchdowns had they completed the passes.
Yeah. So Ben's stat lines, 26 of 40, 232 yards passing, one touchdown, one interception. That interception happened late, and kind of fizzled out any potential chance of, any kind of comeback. Ben's issue that both of us, I think, agree on, and I think James pointed this out time and time again before I noticed it, but it like makes more sense now, is Ben's deciding where he wants to throw the ball before he throws the ball.
Before the play.
Before he snaps the ball.
Yeah.
Not good.
It's a dangerous game to play. He's starting to stare down receivers. So as soon as he gets the ball in his hands, he's looking at the guy he's going to throw to. And it makes it really easy for defenders to key in on that. And that's how you end up with two or three guys converging in on a ball and intercepting it or breaking it up. So Ben hopefully will learn from this as he's watching footage on himself and realize, hey, you're really staring down receivers and really hurting your own chances of completing balls. He again dumped a lot of passes off to Najee. It is now something that every team will look for the rest of the way. Because this time on the six receptions, only 29 yards for Najee.
Yeah.
And it's just because they're ready for it. They're looking for it on every play. So Ben, I felt, did not distribute the ball as well. Again, he is very happy to have Deontay Johnson back. He loves throwing to Deontay Johnson. But it starts to get predictable again. You know, not enough completion spreading around the field. Pat Freiermuth almost wasn't even involved in the game, and I feel like
that's a big mistake. No, one catch, literally. And here's the thing. The one thing I'll say about Ben with staring down the wide receivers, I think he believes he doesn't have enough time in the pocket to go through his progression. It's the only thing I'll give him. He hasn't had a whole lot of time. The offensive line isn't performing very well, giving him a lot of time. So that's the only excuse he has in my book, but you still need to be able to look off a safety or hold a safety still long enough to get a pass before the safety is crashing down on a wide receiver. That was what led to that last interception, staring down the receiver, deciding to throw where he's going to throw the ball before he even snapped it. It wasn't a good look for Ben, and that game was really hard to watch. But like you said, Ben, when he missed, it wasn't by a mile like in previous games. The only thing that I'm worried about before we move on too much to like wide receivers. Actually, you know what? I'll wait. I'll save it till we get there. Let's talk running backs. Najee Harris, we talked about 15 carries, 11 of those being quote-unquote positive run plays. Only 62 yards. That's better. A 4.1 average is better than what we've been seeing.
You know, a big step in the right direction, honestly.
Yeah, incredible. And he also had the one touchdown, which was almost nice. Not a touchdown, but it was a good play.
Hey, he skied up there, man. That's pretty high up in the air for a guy that big.
That was like a... Who did that a lot? Marshall Faulk.
Yeah, Marshall.
That was a good Marshall
Jumping
play.
Jumping over the top like that. I love seeing it. Najee ran real physical, real hard. But the line did a lot better job of opening some creases and some holes for him. So this is a real positive step in the right direction. Some of this is an effect of having an upgrade run blocking wise from Joe Haig over Chukwuma Okorafor. Chuk's not known for his run blocking, a little better pass blocker than he is run blocker. Joe Haig, that's his specialty, is run blocking. So kind of not a huge surprise to me that the offense was more successful running the ball with a more physical right tackle out there.
Makes sense. Benny Snell, one run.
One run.
No yards.
One thing I noticed in this game that was a big change previously, we actually saw a little bit of number 29 in the game.
We did. Kalen Ballage was there.
Kalen made some appearances. They didn't give him the ball any, but they put him on the field a few times. Looks like maybe he's earning some snaps over Benny Snell. I would not be surprised if that becomes a little bit more of a thing, especially since Benny had a very minimal impact in the game. He got the ball thrown to him once, was not able to come up with it. I don't know if Kalen has better hands than him or not, but I could see it being a thing where maybe he starts getting snaps over Benny Snell in future games.
Yeah, so that's it for the running game. Offensive line, again, I think we talked about it a little bit. Better run blocking, still not ideal on pass blocking. There was a lot of times, I think Ben was sacked twice, if I'm not mistaken.
At least, yeah.
Was rushed a lot, not a whole lot of time to throw the ball. And even when he did have time to throw the ball, the pocket was crashing around him.
Yeah, I felt like Dan Moore struggled mightily. I think this was his worst game. Trey Turner had a couple times where he got pushed all the way back into the pocket. On the flip side, Trey Turner did actually run block pretty well in this game. You had some ups and downs with those guys. Nice step in the right direction, I thought, with Kendrick Green. There was one play early in the game where he got manhandled by Rashawn Gary. But it looked to me like he might have tripped over Najee Harris when Najee ran past him for a route. So I'm not going to hold as much judgment on that one. I feel like maybe Kendrick is learning a little bit. Maybe the previous game that was so bad was due to the knee injury, which seemed to happen early in the game, and he stuck it out. So maybe there's a little development there. We'll see what's happening. Definitely something to keep an eye on. Also something to keep an eye on is Kevin Dotson, as he injured a hip flexor in this game, was not able to return to the game. That gave B.J. Finney the rest of the snaps the rest of the way. He was a capable backup at the guard position. Maybe even our best backup offensive lineman, honestly.
Yeah, we saw B.J. Finney a lot last year with all the injuries we were facing on the offensive line as well. Mm-hmm. So a familiar face there, and hopefully the offensive line can get it going next week with another, I wouldn't say a pushover team by any means, especially on the defensive side. But moving on to wide receivers and the receiving game in general, the very first thing I want to say is I was very upset with Juju's performance. Juju was the only player who was targeted X number of targets and caught less than 50% of those targets.
Yeah.
He was targeted 8 times, only caught 2 passes. Everyone else caught at least 50% of the passes that were thrown their way. Even Eric Ebron. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So I'm disappointed in Juju, disappointed in his performance. Even in his performance run blocking, there were times where Najee was getting tackled in front of him, and he stood there and watched. Get in there. Help out. Help your teammate. I realize this team is demoralized right now, very frustrated, but you have to start picking up the pieces somewhere. And Juju, that is a good spot to start.
Yeah, I saw things a little differently from you on this game. Juju did have 8 targets. 2 of them, as we mentioned previously, were overthrown. He had no chance of catching either ball. And then there was another one that I recall on 3rd or 4th down where it was an interior slant play where Ben just stared him down and a linebacker was able to jump in front and bat it down. I didn't see this as Juju underperforming in this game as much as Ben just seeming to choke every time he threw it to him. And that's where that frustration came from with Juju slamming his hand held on the ground on the sideline, is because he knows that he's open, he's doing his job, he's getting open, and Ben's just missing him. And not only is it costing Pittsburgh games this year with Ben missing these passes like this, this could potentially be costing Juju tens of millions of dollars, because he's not going to get a big deal catching 2 balls for 11 yards in a game. Nobody's going to pay him big money. And Pittsburgh's continuing to use him in the slot on quick short passes. And when he finally does get open twice, going deep down the field, they can't hit him. I don't blame him for being frustrated because the execution and trying to get him the ball was awful in this game.
That's a fair point. I still just want to see Juju kind of like the man up or shut up moment of like, just because you're not performing well doesn't mean you stop helping your team.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see from him. Deontay Johnson had himself a game. 9 catches for 92 yards and the touchdown. James Washington, 4 receptions for 69. We saw an extended version or extended look at James Washington with Claypool being out. I thought James Washington played really well.
James had himself a great game. In the interest of what Pittsburgh has seemed to turn their offense into, with a lot of throw short and hope to get yards after, James Washington's kind of a specialist in that because he's great at breaking tackles. He's great at making the first guy miss. So maybe getting the ball to him a little more frequently might be a good idea. Deontay Johnson overall, I thought he did have a nice game, like you mentioned. A couple glaring things to me on one play. He needed to get to the sticks.
Third down.
Juked a couple guys up, got all the way to probably about a half yard short, and then decided to start running backwards. And then all of a sudden we're looking at fourth and four when it should have been fourth and like half a yard, basically.
Or first down.
Or possibly even a first if he dives for it there. So just trying to do a little too much there. When you're getting close to the sticks, it's time to just sprawl out for it. And then the interception at the end of the game, again, he shows that if he thinks he can't catch the ball, he's just going to stop. You need to turn into a defender in that situation and help your quarterback out. Ben's forcing you the ball over and over and over and throwing it disproportionately higher to Deontay than he is any other receiver. And Deontay's not having his back when it comes to those questionable throws. He's not even trying. You got to at least attempt to break the pass up. So I again question his effort on that particular play. Overall, very good performance from Deontay. I don't want to act like I hated how he played out there. 9 catches for 92 yards really speaks for itself, and great play on the long touchdown pass. So let's move on to tight ends.
Yes, let's. Okay, tight ends. All of them got involved this week, minus, well, no, all the active tight
all
ends
the active
got
tight
involved.
Ends. Absolutely.
Ebron with the 2 catches.
Woohoo!
Listen, we've been on his butt the whole time.
We have been.
Happy he finally got some catches, especially the big one on third down.
Off the snide, man.
I don't know.
Best game of the year for him.
Best game of the year for Eric. I mean, I'll agree with that.
It is.
So 2 catches, 2 pass, 2 targets. That's the best game. That's the best game
and
he's
a very
had.
Crucial one on third down.
Yep. His bricks turned into glue, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Whatever he did, he caught the ball.
It was impressive.
I think it's really important that Pittsburgh highly considers trading him right now while his value's hot. Please.
It'll happen today.
You got to get a fifth-round pick for him.
Ebron's
or something.
Gone. Ebron's gone.
We're already using Gentry a bunch more than previously anyway.
We are.
Let's just do this, man. Rip the Band-Aid off. Get a fifth-round pick for him. He ain't bringing him back next year anyway.
Fair enough. Pat Freiermuth and Zach Gentry both 1 reception respectively each, but on 1 target each. Pat Freiermuth for 11 yards, Zach Gentry for 10. Zach Gentry for 10 yards, that 1 catch, I mean, that was pretty good.
It was good, man.
It was great.
Honestly, I am pretty impressed with the improvement of Zach Gentry this year. It makes me real optimistic because I felt pretty strongly that Pittsburgh was going to have to go back into the tight end position in the upcoming draft class to get a new number 2 tight end behind Freiermuth. Freiermuth's obviously going to be our number 1 next year. He's pretty much obviously the first stringer right now. But next year with Ebron's contract up, you were wondering, was Gentry ever going to develop into something better than a number 3 that you weren't even going to dress on Sundays? Now he's dressing every Sunday. He's playing, and he's playing pretty doggone well. He's blocking way better than he ever has before, starting to contribute in the receiving game too. I'm optimistic. Maybe now you wait until like the 7th round for a tight end and just take a flyer on
it. If
guy,
you
know?
Even get one, you could even get an undrafted guy and hit gold.
You
for
never
all
know.
We know.
Yeah, you never know. Or just go with Raider. Kevin Raider is your number 3 next year.
You could do that as well.
You never know.
The options are there for Pittsburgh. That is for sure. Let's move on to the defensive side of the ball. Defensive line specifically, Cam Hayward, another great game for him. Not as disruptive as I would have liked. But with 8 total tackles, 5 solo, 3 assists, and as well as the one tackle for loss. It's not bad for him. I was sad I didn't get to see him bat down a ball that game. He typically does that like every freaking game. He
gets one almost every game, but a very active game for the big man. A little bit better help out of his teammates on the defensive line this week. Still not making a big impact against the run, but Chris Wormley did contribute 4 tackles and registered a forced fumble, although it looked like maybe Joe Schobert got a hand on that too.
I think Joe Schobert forced that fumble. We'll have to wait and see what happens. I don't think they're going to give it to him. But
yeah, I don't think so either.
He was acting like it was him, but who knows. Isaiah Bugs even getting involved with the tackle for loss on his one solo tackle and one assist. And then you had guys like Christian Kuntz that got a little bit of playing time, and Henry Mondo.
Henry got involved on a tackle, got an assist on the play.
That was it. Which he did a lot of work for that tackle.
He did, really.
He caught up.
He moved up and down the line a lot in this game. Still looking a little undersized and a little under strength in comparison to NFL starters.
Yeah, cannot wait to hopefully get Stephon Tuitt back.
Got it.
Would make a massive difference for our pressure being able to get applied on the quarterback for sure.
Yeah, still having a tough time with getting pressure on the quarterback from the interior defensive line at this point.
Yeah.
Which has just been a strength in previous years. So it's odd to look at it that way.
Yeah, linebackers.
Outside first?
We'll do outside first. TJ Watt, 2 sacks.
Yeah, man, back in it.
One was a little bit of a fluke, but we'll take it.
Yeah, and realistically, he still didn't look 100%.
No.
He said he's healthy enough to play. I think his best chance of getting to 100% will be after the bye week. If they sit him for a week and a half and just let it heal up, it's got a chance of healing all the way. But they'll need to do that during that time, because otherwise it's just going to be managing the discomfort in this groin injury. Alex Highsmith was pretty highly involved as well, with 5 tackles total, 2 solos, 3 assists. But not a lot of production from other guys outside of those 2 at the outside linebacker position.
No, you had Melvin Ingram with 1 tackle, and that was literally about it. You didn't get a whole lot out of anybody else, unfortunately. Moving on to the interior linebackers, Joe Schobert and Devin Bush, both heavily involved in this game. Joe Schobert still not impressing me. Granted, he had a really good breakup in the end zone that debatably could have been intercepted had it been more inside the end zone, not outside the end zone. But that was about his highlight for the day, was that.
Yeah, Joe Schobert did a lot better in pass coverage, I thought, this week. Showed up pretty well there. And Devin Bush all over the place. You know, Devin made some nice tackles in the game and did register a quarterback sack.
Yeah.
Which is nice seeing a sack out of middle linebacker. We're not used to that. Anyway.
No, and the way they did that was they had TJ Watt on the line, you had Devin Bush on the line, Cam Sutton on the line, and then you had Cam Sutton and TJ Watt pull back.
On the same side.
So they didn't realize that they were missing somebody on the other side. Devin Bush ran right through a gap, easy sack. I really enjoyed that play call and that scheme, because you could do that all the time and just choose who you want to pull back in coverage. Yep. Even pull back Cam Hayward. Cam Hayward could get a pick over the middle. Let's go. You could do a lot out of that formation or that scheme, and I like seeing that.
Yeah. Important to keep guys on their toes, especially the level of an Aaron Rodgers. If you just run vanilla stuff at him, he'll carve you up. So.
Yeah, that was about it out of middle linebackers. Didn't see much out of the guys like Robert Spillane or anybody backing them up, unfortunately. Moving on to corners. Big thing, Joe Hayden. I remember the one quick pass outside, he tried to stand the guy up and the guy just juked him out. Joe Hayden, I think, is losing his step a little bit. I don't think Joe is as intimidating of a corner as he used to be. Even as recent as last year, I think he's lost a step.
Well, and the only thing I'll say in Joe's defense is I felt like the last 2 years he started off slow, and then once about mid-season hit, maybe a little earlier, really kind of took off. I feel like Joe's a slow starter on the regular season. So I won't lose faith in Joe until probably about week 8 or 9. If he's still not looking fantastic, then the writing's probably on the wall at that point. But he does have a habit of having much better second halves of the year than he does first half of the year.
Yeah.
So
someone who I was impressed with, though.
Who's that?
Arthur Mollett.
Arthur's making some plays out there.
Arthur's doing more than I would expect him to do at this point.
Yeah, he's really embracing the Mike Hilton role of stopping a run.
He had 2 tackles for loss in this game out of his 3 total tackles. No assists for him, but Arthur Millette was doing a good job of faking whenever he was, like, faking the blitz, making them take a second look, going back in coverage, dropping underneath or going in the middle, wherever he needed to go. I didn't see him being any kind of weak point, like a hard weak point.
Yeah, I didn't think he was getting picked on a lot by Aaron Rodgers or anything. That was more vertically down the field. Cam Sutton and James Pierre were getting targeted a decent amount. And it's tough for Cam Sutton because he did injure a groin in this game and played through it as much as he could. But realistically, playing corner is a very difficult position to play with an injured groin.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're constantly cutting, and it's exceedingly painful to do so when you have an injured groin.
Last guy we can talk about in the cornerback room, James Pierre. Weak spot on the defense for me, in my opinion. I don't think he did a lot. I don't think he did enough. I think he... I just didn't see enough effort.
Yeah, I feel like James Pierre is kind of an also-ran at this point. Like, he's on the field. You're just not seeing any production. Not much with passes defensed or no interceptions so far on the season. So, got to try to make more happen. But the safeties, on the hand, highly involved in this game.
Yeah, whether for better or for worse, with looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
You don't always want your safeties leading the team in tackles, but that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Minkah and Terrell Edmonds, top 2 guys in tackles. 8 for Minkah. 7 for Terrell Edmonds. Both had 6 solos, and then Minkah with 2 assists, Terrell Edmonds with 1. The biggest thing I will say here is Terrell Edmonds should never be one-on-one guarding a receiver, first off. He did get burned pretty bad on a touchdown play.
Yep.
And other than that, Minkah Fitzpatrick still is a playmaker. Even though it was called back, Minkah Fitzpatrick did block a field goal and managed to pick it up, scoop, and score, run basically a large length of the field for a touchdown to end the second half. Unfortunately, called back for a bullcrap offsides penalty.
Phantom offsides is the only way we can call it. The instant replay showed that Joe Hayden moved when the center moved the ball, which is actually good timing, not offsides. It's impossible for him to have been offsides, because had he lined up offsides, they would have said he lined up in the neutral zone. It would have been a neutral zone infraction, as they call it.
Yep.
So that's not what it was called. It was called offsides, which means they felt he moved too early, which all they needed to do was replay it, and they would have seen that he moved at exactly the right time. In fact, Joe Hayden, Minkah Fitzpatrick, and Joe Schobert all moved at the exact time that the ball was snapped, which shows me that there was a timing thing that they found on tape and studying for the game. Because they all timed it exactly perfectly.
Yeah.
It's a 10-point swing on that play right there, because they end up getting a field goal on the next play.
Yep. And Pittsburgh will go on to wind up losing by 10. So we never know. We don't know to the full extent what that play could have made or could have meant to the outcome of the game. But a huge momentum swing going into half. Pittsburgh would have gone into the half with the lead. That would have been massive.
Yeah, and honestly, even though we're not done with positional recaps yet, that is one of the main reasons that I'm not as down on this team after this game as a lot of fans are. Because that's a 10-point swing right there. And then we have both of the passes that were missed on attempted passes to Juju, where at least one of them would have gone for a touchdown, maybe 2 of them. They get a field goal on one drive and nothing on the other drive. That's a lot of points, man. And you're that close. Fractions of an inch or just a couple inches in these plays, or maybe just a referee being willing to re-look at a situation to see if they missed a call or not.
Yeah, I think how I feel about this team as a whole won't be solidified, but will be a little bit more set in stone after this next week. The Denver Broncos are not they were 3-0 at one point, but they're not an incredibly talented team.
They're no cupcake either.
No, they're not, but they're no Green Bay Packers, in my opinion, and they're no Buffalo Bills.
Correct.
We could have beaten Green Bay, and we did beat the Buffalo Bills.
Yep.
We should beat the Denver Broncos. The Bengals is a divisional game. Divisional games are always a little bit tougher. I don't hold anything necessarily against them. And then the other game that we lost in, I believe that was week 2.
Yes, against the Raiders.
Against the Raiders. We always lose the Raiders. I don't know more to say. So, yeah, I mean, the Raiders are – we always somehow – again, I don't have anything more to say about that. So I think my view on the team as a whole will be solidified after this week. I will be at the game. I'm going to watch it. I'm going with my cousin. I'm excited. But I think this is a game that can either be like, hey, Pittsburgh's going to turn it around. There's a chance. Or, hey, it's not happening. I mean, that's what I feel like I'm going to be processing.
I feel like you should probably go live while you're there, Cody.
I might.
Not like during the game, during the tailgating, though.
Oh, I'll go live. I'll be with Rhino.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be with Rhino.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah, you definitely
My goal
go
is
live.
To get down there at 8 or 9 a.m. So we can do that. And depending on how I go live, I could go live on Instagram and even get you to join in or whatever. We could figure something out. So be looking for that. I might have to invest in a phone charger to do that if I'm going to be down there all day for that.
I have to stay all like...
No, but I want to be able to have my phone for the game too, and yeah. It'll die. I mean, being there tailgating and then also going into the... It'll die fast.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But super excited to be at the game this week. And I'll be at the game the following week as well. As we play Sunday night against Seattle. I made sure to take off work on Monday. I don't want to have to try and go to work after driving back and getting home at like 1 a.m. But it'll be a good time for sure.
I'm excited for you, man.
You know what time it is? We are. It's time for our... Well, I guess we should finish up. Hang on.
Let's talk teams, man. We didn't talk about the special teams.
We didn't. So... Boswell, 1 for 1 on the field goal, 2 for 2 on the extra point. Boz for president.
52-yarder.
52-yarder bounced off the upright and through.
And
he made me nervous.
He's
made me nervous.
Listen, he's more reliable than your alarm clock.
That's fair. Presley Harvin III, 3 punts. One of them was horrific.
He almost got hit, though. He thought he was going to get hit.
He did think he was going to get hit.
I thought he got knocked down, but they didn't even show a replay, which means he probably did get knocked down.
And they didn't call a flag.
Yeah, no flag on the play, and it was only 20 yards, so it really screwed up his average. but the other two punts I thought were very good. So,
yeah, fair enough. And then Ray McLeod, 3 returns for kickoff, and 33 yard was his average. That's phenomenal.
That's
33 yard
good.
Is your average?
That's very good.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal, yeah. Phenomenal. And then Ray, the one punt return, 14 yards, not bad. But that's going to finish up the overall look at the team. It is now time to look ahead to the Denver Broncos. We talked about it a little bit. Looking at their team, you have the quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy!
Teddy is Teddy.
That's talented Teddy, man. He's a lot better than I think a lot of people give him credit.
Well, I think so is Drew Locke, who's their backup.
I think Drew Locke's a bum, personally.
Well, I think he's better than people think. I don't think he's phenomenal, okay. Just to clarify.
All right, so he's like a step above Dwayne Haskins.
No, he's a step above Mason Rudolph. Continuing.
Oh.
So wide receivers, they have some deep threats here. KJ Hamler, Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick. They even have Deontay Spencer, which if you recognize that game, Deontay Spencer was a prospect for Pittsburgh in the past. He played with us for the preseason and had some decent plays.
Some nice kick returns. He was a really good return man.
Very nice.
The only advantage here is KJ Hamler out for the year with an ACL now. So we don't have to worry about KJ. Hate to see that as a former Penn State player. Really love seeing them succeed in the league. But Cortland Sutton's a monster. So definitely something that we're going to have to really pay attention to and speed at the other wide receiver positions for sure. Now also speed at the tight end position, man.
Yeah.
Noah Fant, a very good receiving tight end with some deep threat. And Albert Okwuegbunam ran a 4.50 flat at the combine. So
that's fast.
For a big tight end.
For a big
end
tight
like
end,
that,
that's fast.
That's fast. These guys can move. It's going to be a real challenge for both Joe Schobert and Devin Bush to make sure they match up with them and don't get beat deep. They're taller receivers, too, so you got to watch for those vertical passes. Very important. Terrell Edmonds and Minkah Fitzpatrick help out with the coverage on these guys this week.
Absolutely. Offensive lineman is probably
this might be the best line we've gone against.
It very could be. We keep saying that. Garrett Bowles at left tackle, Dalton Reisner at left guard, Lloyd Cushenberry III at center, Graham Glasgow at right guard, and Bobby Massey at right tackle. Don't forget, they also have Melvin Gordon at running back.
Quite the resume from Melvin. He's had a really good career. And the promising young rookie, Javonte Williams, out of North Carolina, backing him up. So Some nice talent there at the running back position. Also, I'm curious to see if Quinn Miners gets in the game. We talked a lot about him in the pre-draft process, really hoping Pittsburgh would draft him. They end up going a different direction at center with Kendrick Green. If he gets an opportunity to play, I'll be very interested to see how he holds up against the Steelers' defensive line, specifically against Cam Hayward. He holds his own against Cam Hayward.
You're going to be mad.
He could be the real deal, yeah.
Yep, now time to look at the defense, though, here. This could be one of the more talented secondaries we've gone up against, and I think we haven't gone up against easy secondaries for most of the year. But I do want to start with the secondary. I know we normally start, you know, defensive line linebackers.
Yeah.
The secondary has, you know, the cornerbacks, Kyle Fuller, Pat Surtain the second. They also have Bryce Callahan, who's no joke, and Nate Hairston as well. Then you look at the safeties, Kareem Jackson with P.J. Locke backing him up. P.J. Locke had a short stint with the Steelers. And then also Justin Simmons at free safety. Phenomenal free safety.
Justin's very, very talented. That's a great four, man. That's a great foursome back there. So it's really going to challenge Ben as far as his throwing capabilities in this game. If he can improve, and he's improving against this secondary, that says a lot. Even if he only has like slight improvements but plays a lot better overall, you're going to really take that as a win.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to the defensive line, Draymond Jones and Shelby Harris are lined up at the defensive end positions, and then you have the nose tackle, Mike Purcell. Nothing too, you know, scary there on the defensive line, but that defensive line can still apply pressure. I'm very curious to see if we'll be able to run against this front. But then when you go to the linebackers, that's where it gets a little bit scary. You see that big number 58 there, and you get a little worried.
Now, I'm going to be honest. That's the only guy I'm scared about on their linebacker core.
That's enough for me.
But Von Miller is an excellent pass rusher on the outside. They'll move him from side to side, too, so just depends on where they feel their best matchup is at the time. I wouldn't be surprised if he matches up against Dan Moore a lot, because Dan looked like
horrible.
He had a real rough time.
Horrible?
Yeah.
Horrible?
I'm trying to be nice.
I mean, I can call it as it is. I can still be nice later.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. So one thing we can think about here, if Banner comes back, maybe they move Okorafor back over to the left. I feel like he played better on the left side last year than he's playing on the right this year.
I would agree with that. I would agree. As long as he's back from his concussion.
Yeah, I think he will be. Usually guys don't
be.
Miss more than 1 week.
Yeah, he should
that.
Be. But then you also have the inside linebackers. You have Malik Reed and Alexander Johnson. And then the other side, you have Justin Strnad.
Yeah.
And then finally, looking at the special teams, you have Brandon McManus as the kickoff and place kicker. And then you have Sam Martin as the punter and the holder. Long snapper, Jacob Bobbenmeyer.
It sounds made up,
Bobbenmeyer? I don't know.
It's got to be Bobbenmeyer. Bobbenmeyer.
It's Bobbenmeyer.
That's like two. It's like three people. We got Jacob, Bob, and Moyer.
Wow. Too much.
Yeah.
Too much for a long
snapper. You
can't
have three people at one position, Denver. That's cheating.
You can't. And then you also have the kick return, punt return specialist that we already talked about, Deontay Spencer. I'd be very upset
dangerous.
If he returns one on us after we didn't keep him.
He's dangerous, but he did have a fumbling issue.
He did.
With Pittsburgh. That was one of the reasons they didn't hang on to him. So look for that. I bet our guys attempt to strip the ball from him, and I like the chances of maybe a Robert Spillane poking that thing out.
Heck yeah. Let's keep an eye on that. So now it's time for our three takeaways. We were supposed to have Nick Van Ort here with us, but due to a technical issue on our end, that is not happening. So next week, we will have Nick Van Ort with us to go over this section, and then the following week, we'll again be none other than Mr. Perry himself.
Josh Perry, we're going to reach out to him, try to get a hold of him, and get his takes for the following game. Cody, you want to go first? You want me to go first? I think I went first last week, so I feel like you should go first.
Okay, I can go first.
All right.
So my key takeaways for this game is, one, limit the deep balls. I want to see our secondary not get burnt deep, not even get burnt. I want to limit the number of times they pass the ball for more than 20 yards down the field. That's what I want to limit. We haven't been able to do it on offense for ourselves. I want to limit another team from being able to do it. And those receivers are a very large threat for us. Second thing, I want us to be able to, again, and I'm trying to think of the best way to word this now. I want our offense to be balanced. That's the best way I can think of to word this. I want to have a balanced run game. I want to have a balanced passing game. I don't want to be one of those things where Ben's throwing 50, 60 times a game. I don't even want Ben throwing 40 times a game. I don't want it. I want to see a good, hard-nosed running the ball and then allowing us to do some play action on the backside of that. Last but not least, I want Ben to connect on these passes with wide receivers. I don't even care if they're further than 5 or 10 yards down the field. They don't need to be 30, 40-yard bombs. I just want Ben to get in rhythm with some of these receivers and giving them chances to make plays after they catch the ball without being these little dinks and dunks for 3 to 4 yards downfield. I want to see some mid-range to long-range balls connect. That's my three.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've got different ones.
Okay, week. I like it.
My very first key is to connect on some deep passes.
I like it.
So not just throwing it deep, but connecting when you do so. I feel like that's really important for opening up the middle of the field or for those intermediate passes that Cody was talking about wanting to see more of. We connect on some deep balls, that'll open that up. Second key, get Juju and Pat Freiermuth more involved. I don't like seeing only one ball thrown to Pat Freiermuth. He catches dang near everything that's thrown to him, and he's great at moving the sticks. We haven't used him in the red zone yet. It's time to start throwing to Pat Freiermuth in the red zone.
But it was like a tight end screen.
Oh, yeah, that was a little, like,
I don't count
it. Yeah, it was like a toss, and he gets the touchdown out of it, which is great, but yeah. Let's actually use him in the vertical passing game.
I like it. I like it.
And in Juju with these passes, got to get more creative and we got to be more precise on those deep opportunities. Juju needs it just as much as the Steelers team needs it. You want to keep him in a positive attitude throughout the game, throw him good balls. I guarantee you he'll be smiling all game if he's catching some good passes. And then my final one is going to be to slow down the Denver tight ends. These guys are highly athletic and explosive, and it's a real mismatch height and size-wise with their tight ends versus our middle linebackers, which is typically the matchup there. So very important that we've got good scheme in the safeties and corners, have those middle linebackers' backs and help them out in coverage.
I like it. I like it a lot. I think if Pittsburgh can do all the things that we just talked about, we could possibly exit that game with a win.
That'd be nice, man. We really need it.
So, again, we can't thank you guys enough for listening. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Steelers by Lake. Hey, the new month started. Get your friends, get your family, get downloading some of these episodes. Maybe you can be a part of the next state to take over the winning downloads.
Yeah, that's it, man.
So, again, thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you guys later. Until next time, this is your host, James and Cody. Signing off.
Peace.